I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. While the newly announced U.S. figure skating team is sharpening their skates in preparation for the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, we might remember past greats like Dorothy Hamill, Michelle Kwan, or Nancy Kerrigan, who went on to win the silver despite being struck on the knee by an assailant just weeks before the 94 Games in Lillehammer, Norway. Once it was discovered that fellow skater Tanya Harding's ex-husband had plotted the attack, scandal ensued, embroiling both skaters in a media firestorm that eventually played out on the ice. In the new documentary, The Price of Gold, director Nanette Burstein takes another look at the Harding-Kerrigan spectacle 20 years later. It premieres on ESPN this Thursday, January 16th at 9 p.m., and I'm pleased it's brought Nanette Burstein to our show today. Welcome, Nanette.
Well, thank you for having me.
My only regret is that we don't have 2 hours to talk about this documentary. I watched it last night, and it was like, I don't know, it was like crack, or it was like an acid trip back to the 1990s. It's sort of a, I don't know, festival of bad behavior and bad hair. It was so...
and shoulder pads.
Can't believe people... It's amazing that people looked like that just 20 years ago. Now, Tanya Harding, you got extensive cooperation from Tanya Harding. She is the star of your show. And I thought it was actually skillful and somewhat unexpected that in the first, I'd say, half hour of the film, as you describe her and you show great footage from her childhood, you actually build a great deal of sympathy for her as a character, which is tried later on in the story, of course. But was it poignant for you to see the childhood footage of Tanya, who was sort of brutalized by her mother and from this terribly distressed home and was just doing everything she could to skate her way out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I for me, that's always one of the aspects that made this story so interesting to me was, you know, seeing the footage of her childhood. Some of it was available online and some of it I later discovered, but you know, what was so poignant about her story was, you know, she really was not only sort of the girl from the wrong side of the tracks, but had a very abusive mom, you know, and escaped from her mother and, you know, right into the marriage of a man who also was brutal to her. So, you know, your heart goes out to her. You see this young girl who just has, like, just so much talent. Who's looking for an escape out of it, and you're rooting for her. And of course, later on, you know, you might feel a little differently. It becomes more complicated, but one can't help but have enormous empathy for her in her youth.
The other thing that struck me about your version of this story, as opposed to what I received 20 years ago when I was watching this sheep-like with everybody else in the world, and we were so compelled by this story, the media did a really good job of turning into a black and white story. They had Tanya Harding was this hardscrabble, feisty, kind of street smart, you know, street knifing kind of girl. And Nancy Kerrigan was this ice princess, this sort of frosty, privileged girl. But of course she wasn't. I mean, that's what your film shows, is that she was also not from a fancy background.
Yeah, she was a blue-collar girl from an Irish Boston family. Who did not come from money, but she looked like she came from money.
She looked expensive.
She did, and she had these beautiful Vera Wang costumes. Vera Wang actually helped make a name for herself through Nancy Kerrigan, but she had that poise and that grace and that beauty that seemed like she was like a Kennedy or something. And, you know, the thing is the media painted the story as, you know, the evil witch versus the ice princess. It was like Snow White. And Nancy even looked like...
Or Dynasty, as
pointed out in the film. You know, and Nancy Kerrigan even looks like Snow White. So it was perfect for that. And it really was the pendulum of the media was shifting that year. You know, the idea of covering a story 24 hours a day, a tabloid story and major media outlets doing that worldwide. You know, this is the same year as O.J. Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those first stories that, you know, became mainstream. And, you know, you had the New York Times alongside with the National Enquirer covering the story.
Yeah, so they would sort of hold their nose, but they would have to be there because that's where the ratings were.
Exactly.
You know, you talked about the Vera Wang outfits that Nancy Kerrigan wore, and Tonya Harding made her own outfits, which were, she couldn't afford Vera Wang, obviously. But she would sew these kind of bizarre, I would say, tacky
outfits.
There
was a Sgt. Pepper's aspect to some of her costumes.
Describe some of the things that she had a sort of a hot pink number that she got a lot of flack for.
Yeah, I mean, one of the judges said to her at a national competition, she wore this pink sparkly outfit, and they said, if you ever wear something like that again, you will not be able to compete. We will not give you the marks that you deserve. And she went right back at them and said, well, I'm going to wear whatever I want to wear. But see, that was the thing about skating back then, and even to a degree now, less so, is that half of your mark is on quote-unquote artistry, which means, like, what costumes do you wear? What music do you skate to? How poised and graceful you are? And it's like a beauty pageant and totally subjective. And you have to kind of do, and the judges will come to your practices and make recommendations on your, not only your program, but your outfits and your music. And it's a very odd sport.
I actually didn't know that much about the Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding rivalry leading up to those Olympics, because who had heard of these? Unless you were a skating fan, you wouldn't know who those people were until the Olympics. But actually, Tonya Harding had bested Nancy Kerrigan earlier in their rivalry. Can you tell us something about that? That was interesting to me.
Yeah, in 1991, a few years before that, Tonya had landed what's called a triple axle jump, and she was the first American woman to ever do that. And one of the only people, even to this day, women who have landed that jump. And as she won everything that year. You know, she won nationals, she came second in world, and Nancy was behind her. But then Tonya had trouble landing that jump. And that was the thing about Tonya. Athletically, she was an amazing skater. And so if you can land a jump like that, they can't help but give you the championship. But without that jump, she was never going to get it. She was not the ice queen.
Now, why do you think she couldn't do it again?
Well, she had, as the film describes, she had a lot of personal problems going on. You know, she married this guy, Jeff Galooly, and he was physically abusive to her, and so it was hard for her to focus.
So you think it was just the personal, or do you think it was more of a fluky thing that she did in the first place? Do you think it was a hard thing to repeat?
Well, she would land it in practice a lot, but I think also I've heard from people that, you know, some of her victory had gone to her head and she wasn't working as hard or training as hard as she should have been. But I do think that there were major distractions going on in her life that were warranted.
Sure. I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate, and I am talking to director Nanette Burstein about her outstanding documentary, The Price of Gold, which is all about the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan phenomenon, spectacle, scandal.
Scandal,
that's the
scandal
word I'm looking for. It's going to be on ESPN this Thursday night. Okay, so that's their background. They're these two skaters, sort of the media later portrays as being on opposite sides of the tracks, although not really. They're both kind of scrappy people, very hardworking. We get to the run-up to Lillehammer, and what's the background of this assault? I assume almost everybody who's listening to this show remembers this, but there are some people who may not know anything about what we're talking about. So why don't you explain what happened?
Well, right before the Olympics, there is a national championship, and whoever comes in first and second is named to the U.S. Olympic team, which is 6 weeks later. So Nancy and Tonya are the top contenders, and the day before Nancy is supposed to compete, she walks off the ice of at the arena at the practice session, and this guy comes out of nowhere and hits her with a baton, whacks her in the knee, and it's caught on camera. And she's screaming and crying, why? And
hold up a second, I had totally forgotten, or maybe I never knew, that this assault happened in a building with, like, all these people there. I mean, there were all these people, you know, just within yards of them who could have instantly walked in and seen this guy bashing her on the knee.
It's true. And people just saw, they just saw out of the corner of their eye. Like, literally, she, it's funny because the camera's on her stepping off the ice and the camera tilts down for a second and the guy takes that opportunity to whack her in the knee. And 2 seconds later, the camera comes up. And all you see is this, like, figure in the distance running out. He's, you know, unrecognizable.
And he runs through, like, a plate glass door, right?
He does. He goes, the
like
door
Hulk.
To
it's
the
like
arena,
the Hulk.
It turns
yeah.
out to be locked. That was going to be his escape plan. So he bashes the door, which he had a baton. For some reason, didn't use the baton to bash
right.
the glass door. He used his, like, head.
That was maybe the first indication that this was not the most well-thought-out crime in history. It really made the O.J. Simpson thing look like much more, you know, much more premeditated, deft, whatever. They, who was the guy who did it? What was his connection to Tonya Harding?
His name was Shane Stant. He really had almost no connection to Tonya Harding.
He was like a hired gun, right?
He was a
hired baton
wielder, yes. he had never met Tonya. He was like the, you know, a friend of a friend of a friend kind of thing. And really, you know, about 2 or 3 days after it happened, it started to come out in the media, and the FBI had discovered who was involved in this because Tonya's husband had enlisted his high school friend, this guy by the name of Sean Eckhart, who was a quote-unquote out-of-work bodyguard. And Sean Eckhart then hired these two guys to be the hit team. Sean Eckhart starts telling everyone, even before it happened, that he's planning to do this, like, major crime and hit, and no one believed him. And then, of course, once it happened, people all started calling up news outlets and the FBI going, this guy said that he was going to do this, and then it happened. So right away, they found out how this who was involved.
And also they created kind of a paper trail because they had to go. Was it Detroit where this took place?
Well, originally they were going to get her at her own arena where she trained in Boston.
Right.
But then they discovered that she had already left and gone to Detroit
right.
for the competition.
So, of course, they put the trip to Detroit on their Visa card to make it very easy for people to track it.
All
later.
Of their travel was done on their Visa card. They checked into hotels with, using
under
their
names.
Own name.
Very helpful.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
So it was very easy for the FBI to say, we have a paper trail. And they confessed. They all confessed except for Tonya.
Tonya. And Tonya... well, there's a sort of a, I don't know if you'd call it heartbreaking, but there's a memorable moment in your documentary where they're discussing the fact that this this note was later, it was sort of a handwritten memo, I guess you could say, it's detailing all the major bullet points of this plan. And she says, you know, they had a handwriting expert come in and take a look at it, and they verified that it was not my handwriting. And then, of course, you have somebody say, from the FBI, I guess.
It was the district attorney.
The district attorney who says, well, we did a handwriting analysis, and it was Tonya Harding's handwriting. So she's just essentially lying directly to you.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yeah.
How much of what she said to you struck you as being 100% lying? Because she's on camera quite a bit.
She is. And there are a bunch of stuff that she says to me that I didn't believe and couldn't have anyone refute. So I just did not put it into the film
mm-hmm.
because I did not want to mislead the audience into mm-hmm. them believing that it was in any way true. So I felt like, you know, the portion, what I put into the film, I believed, or I could at least have someone else give a contrary opinion about.
Right.
Because, you know, here is someone who is your narrator who is unreliable to a degree, because what advantage do they have to coming clean after all these years? You know, what she ultimately confessed to was hindering prosecution, meaning that she knew about it after the fact that it happened and didn't come to the authorities earlier. So she had no jail time served. However, she was banned from the sport for life,
right?
Which had enormous consequences, obviously.
Right. Well, she not only does she say a number of things that are not reliable or are lies, but she also really portrays herself as a victim of this whole story, because she talks about how everybody else, because of this scandal, it raised the profile of the sport tremendously. And so people like Nancy Kerrigan and Nancy Kwan all, you know, went on to make millions of dollars. She omits the fact that this whole scandal wouldn't have happened if she hadn't gotten some guys to hit Nancy Kerrigan in the knee with a baton. So she was, in a sense, not able to capitalize on the crime that she was a conspirator in, we believe. But she had sort of no irony as she was as she was describing this to you. She just was straight up 100% victim, I thought.
Right. There's absolutely everything that she tells you, and a lot of it, she, you know, the first part of her life, she was the victim. But the second part of her life, she takes no responsibility for whatsoever. And she doesn't see it. And like even she's describing, you know, at the practice session at the Olympics, where she's going to meet Nancy for the first time since this happened. And at this point, you know, it's come out that her husband had done this and perhaps she was involved. And she says, you know, I went up to Nancy and apologized for the behavior of my husband. And she just looked at me as though I was, you know, trash. And I just thought, how rude. You know, we were friends. Like, she doesn't understand that, you know, Nancy would, of course, have that kind of reaction, if not worse.
Right. And when Nancy Kerrigan, there's footage of her being annoyed, I guess, because Oksana Bayul, who won the gold, was taking some time to work on her makeup before they went up on the platform. And Nancy Kerrigan, understandably, was a little bit, you know, disappointed. She just won the silver and was sort of complaining about how long it was taking Oksana Bayul. And you cut to Tanya now in 2013. Saying, I just wanted to say, shut up. And it was just a really interesting position of moral superiority for Tanya Harding to take over Nancy Kerrigan. Just quickly, before we have to go, yes. Were you bummed that Nancy Kerrigan did not participate in the documentary? Her husband's there.
But... Her husband's in it and her trainers. And to a degree, I was. I mean, the film was always intended to be focused on Tanya, but it would have been nice for her to contribute something.
Well, it's a must-see regardless.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Nanette Burstein. She's the director of the ESPN documentary, The Price of Gold. It airs January 16th at 9 p.m. Thanks so much, Nanette.
Oh, thanks for having me, Andy.